This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
The aim of our session really this afternoon is to try and bring the voice of the child into this room. And I think one of the things that's really impacted on me today is that I think children have been very much outside of a lot of the discussions that have been going on. And I was really delighted towards the end of the day to hear Louise Casey saying, child, 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 children, hooray!
Yeah.
So that's, I think, what we're going to try and do for the last half hour of the day. Just to say a little bit first about our individual projects. Both NSPCC projects that have grown up from within our own organisations, really, different types of funding. The Devon and Cornwall Young Witness Service has been running now for approximately 16 years, since 1994. Feels like forever, really. And we deliver a service across the whole of the South West Peninsula to all children and young people who are victims of any form of child abuse, any form of domestic violence, or who are witnesses to serious crime. We don't look after every single child because we don't have the resourcing to do so. We are primarily funded by our own organisation, i.e. by charity, the NSPCC, people rattling cans, quite literally. What we do also have, though, is a small amount of funding. About 10% of our budget comes from the four local safeguarding children's boards in our area, which I think is quite, well, I know it's quite unique, and I think it's really good because it does mean that you've got criminal justice agencies working together with safeguarding agencies and keeping children very much in the middle of what we actually do. The only other thing I'd say immediately about the Devon and Cornwall Young Witness Service is we have remote video link facilities in our area, which means that children in Devon and in Plymouth don't actually go to court to give evidence. And we've been hearing today about some of the difficulties that particularly vulnerable victims of crimes such as sexual offences, things like that, children, young people, vulnerable witnesses who are intimidated, who are fearful, the worst thing for them is to go to the court building. So we actually have facilities whereby children and young people come to the NSPCC office. We have a link up to the Crown Courts or to the Magistrates Courts or to anywhere in the world for that matter. And the child stays with us in a friendly environment that suits their needs until they're actually required to give evidence. Then they go into the NSPCC video link room with their supporter and we link up to the court. It's made a tremendous amount of difference to particularly children who are scared. You heard Louise Casey's letter reading earlier, so that's taken away my chance to read it now, hasn't it? But never mind. One of the things that convinces a lot of children about going to court is that they know they're going to be safe. And I think that's one of the provisions that we can give to them. And we don't understand, we do not know why this hasn't rolled out across the whole of the United Kingdom, because it's not very expensive, it's not very difficult, and it works for victims. It makes a huge difference. I'll be quiet. Northern Ireland.
We are different in Northern Ireland because we got set up as a pilot in NSPCC in 1999, and we paid for it for 2 years. The Northern Ireland office then, it's now the Department of Justice, then evaluated the service and went, yep, we like this. And they took a decision then to fund witness service and young witness service. So the witness service does all 18 and over, and we do all young people underneath that. We started off in all the criminal courts and crown courts, and we now support children in all the Crown Courts in Northern Ireland, and we're in selected magistrates and youth courts. I am literally going in tomorrow to a funding negotiation, which will be quite interesting, because they want us to roll this service out to all children who have to give evidence in a criminal trial in Northern Ireland, and we're obviously very keen to do that. The funding is still roughly about 90%, and we supply some of the funding, which for ourselves is quite useful because it does give us an element of independence where there may be a young defence witness who is particularly vulnerable, or there may be some adults who are more vulnerable and there isn't a support mechanism there that we may take on board for that. So we're in all Crown Courts in Northern Ireland, I say, in quite a lot of magistrates and youth, and hopefully in the next within the next year we will be supporting all young children in Northern Ireland. We took our lead in terms of remote link from Devon and Cornwall, and we now have one based in the west of the country in Londonderry, Stroke Derry. And we have been pushing hard for court service to then help pick up on that and roll that service out. So we will have three or four more centres around where children in Northern Ireland don't actually ever have to go into court. This is a progress, sort of work in progress with us, and we're working hard at it and we're getting somewhere. One of the unique elements that we have, because Northern Ireland is so small and we have a very small population, is that we then get to represent children on most of the major forums in Northern Ireland, like the Criminal Justice Board, and we also get onto severe lobbying and we get to speak to the Minister quite a lot. So that's also a really, you know, very useful, we're actually key players when it comes to obviously supporting young witnesses. Sarah, do you want to go back and talk about some research?
Okay. We heard earlier a mention of the victim, the witness being the poor relation in criminal justice cases. And about 5 years ago, in 2005, the NSPCC sponsored some commissioned some research that was carried out by Joyce Plotnikoff and Richard Wolfson about children and young people's experience of giving evidence in Crown Court proceedings in the main. This was called In Their Own Words. And a number of children met with the researchers and talked about what they had actually been through at court. And the experiences that they described were pretty horrendous. I mean, they were talking about things like being called liars, like being kept waiting for days on end at court buildings, sitting in the same room as people who were supporting defendants. The picture that was drawn was pretty poor. And then last year, the Nuffield Foundation, together with the NSPCC, funded further research to see what had changed in the last 5 years. That research was published last year. It was called Measuring Up. Some of you may have looked at it and read it. And sadly, it demonstrated that not a huge amount had changed across the country on the whole. Services for young witnesses are very, very patchy across the country. There are very few dedicated, specialised services that work with young witnesses and help them prepare well before the event. I mean, it is very good that a child has support on the day, but children need a lot of help understanding the process of the criminal justice system well beforehand. And these services still are not available. Children still aren't having their views listened to. I actually think I work in a part of the country where criminal justice agencies do a really good job. I mean, you know, I would always praise the police, the court staff, they work really hard. But I found myself just last month sat in a Crown Court building with a child who was giving evidence about having been raped in a room with two adults who were giving evidence for a defendant in the court next to the one we were going to be in. And they were about to go in, and they were talking out loud about this chap was absolutely fine. He was an excellent member of the community. He couldn't possibly be a paedophile like all these people are saying. And this child and I were sat in the same room whilst that was happening. So it is still happening now. Things are going very, very wrong. And what we're still not doing, we would argue, is really listening to what children feel and what their experiences are, because we can go in and we can look and see what we see with our adult eyes, and that is in no way the same as what that child is perhaps going to see when they go through the criminal justice system. And we do work with very, very young children. In Devon and Cornwall, I know, you know, 20% of the children we work with each year, and that's about 40, 50 children, are aged 10 years and under. We work with children 4, 5, 6 years of age who are giving evidence. We need to listen to what they say. So what we want to do now is actually present some of children's own thoughts and their own experiences so that we can then discuss with you how that impacts on you, really, and what you think about what they're saying.
Yes, I am. When we wanted to roll out the TV link, I knew I was going to have to persuade, you know, the Criminal Justice Board, the judiciary, to let us use off-site links. And so we came up with the idea of using some of the research information for Northern Ireland from Joyce Plotnikoff. And we went out and we commissioned someone to go and interview some children who'd agreed to meet. So what we did was come up with this DVD of children's voices, which we're going to play for you now. This is obviously done by child actors, but it is all in their own words. What we actually all have done as well is we've actually gone and spoken to the parents as well. So we have a second DVD now, very powerful one, which we did show to the PPS, which is our public prosecution recently, because, you know, it's really quite, you know, quite a damning indictment on the justice system from the adults. But this is really the children's voices of their perceptions of how it was to go to court. Thank you.
It was nervous the first time round. It was nervous because I've never been in the courtroom before.
Before I went to court, I was really stressed and I couldn't concentrate in school because I kept thinking about it all the time.
I was really, really scared because, like, you're thinking, is everybody going to be looking at you and, like, you know, will everybody be against you?
I was kind of scared. I wasn't confident.
You walk past the court because, like, I would go into town a lot and you walk past the court and you think, oh God, there's the court.
No, I didn't get a chance to see the actual courtroom, but my mum's friend, she took me to another one.
But whenever you're actually in it, it's petrifying, like.
When I actually went to the real one, it was really intimidating because it was bigger and, well, it was a real one, so.
It does put a sense of relief on you because you're allowed to go in and look around the court and you get to know your surroundings.
I didn't really know what to expect because they were telling me loads of things, but you couldn't put a picture to it, so.
So we went in and he let us look around the courtroom, and if I was to go into the court, where I would be standing.
Here's where the defence barrister would be, there's the prosecutors, the jury and the public and, you know, just all the stuff in the courtroom, and it was quite scary, like, looking at it because it's so big.
And then I got took up into the video link, so it wasn't too bad because I knew the surroundings of the court, and then I wasn't as nervous going in the second time and the third time as I was the first time.
I liked doing it in Surrey. It was really good. The people there were really nice to me. They went out and got some videos for me because all the ones there were for teenage girls.
The court's too big for children my age. That's what I think.
At the start, I was being all brave and I was like, oh, I'll go into the court, I'll go into the court. But the closer the time came, the more scared I was of running out.
I wouldn't want to do it in a big court, just on the video link.
I would have rather have done it by the TV link, but I wouldn't have been able to see my mummy.
My mum and my dad and my brother were there with me, but they were told they had to go and wait in a different waiting room. But there was a person there from the NSPCC and they can stay with you.
It was in a room, so it was. And there was a person behind me called Noelle. She just had to sit there. But I felt more like there was someone behind me and that there was nothing to worry about.
It was a big TV and I had a remote so I could adjust it if I couldn't see things. So it was good.
And then there's a wee camera at the side of you and then the screen's facing you. And then in the courtroom there's loads of like TVs so they can all see you. But then you can only see the person you're talking to.
Well, I was told I wouldn't be able to see the defendant and he'd only just be able to see me. But on the first day, the day that the sound didn't work, I could see him. So he was sitting right beside his lawyer, and it would have really put me off answering the questions because I wouldn't be able to concentrate.
I wouldn't lie to someone who has to give evidence. Like, it is a really hard thing to do.
I didn't really like the barristers because they were very cheeky.
You're standing there on your own, and you feel all these eyes, you know, looking on you.
It would be scary with all the people watching.
When you glance over at the jury and then you look over at the judge and then you have to address the judge and it's just everything.
I was really nervous and had sweaty palms and all and I was up and down to the toilet.
You have to remember to call him Your Honour and all and it's really hard to like think of all them things.
When I was answering the questions, I was really white, my throat was dry.
Yeah, we took breaks and we got a cup of water.
I seen the defence barrister like face to face with me and he was asking me all these different questions and he was being very, you know, very, like, well, the way a defence barrister would be.
Intimidating, really intimidating, because they're firing real difficult questions at you.
He was always trying to trip me up over and over again. He would make the questions deliberately difficult, and his body language and his tone of voice, he was really aggressive towards me.
Trying to trick me into all these different questions, like,
you've really got to think about what their question is because they say like really difficult words and you're thinking like, well, what are these words? Because I don't understand them.
The supporters said that I could tell him if I didn't understand. But when I did tell him I didn't understand, I said, could you please rephrase it for me? He would be really rude and say, oh, is that simple enough for you then?
They told me to be prepared and all, but I just didn't expect it to be like that.
A couple of times I didn't know the answer to his question, so I just said, I don't know. Sorry, I don't know, but he would just keep on asking over and over again. And the judge had to come in and say, the witness doesn't know.
I didn't expect to get talked to the way I did. And all. It was very hard, so it was.
Very cheeky, and you take it to your heart, like.
Very unpolite, and I didn't like it.
You just got to keep going. Like, I wanted it to be the end. Like, that was the end of it for me, and that's just what made me focus, the end.
The volunteers were all really nice to me, and then if I had any problems, they're really reassuring and just talk me through everything. It's good.
There was a volunteer from the NSPCC there, and she was there the whole 3 times I went. And they give you really good support, because before you go in, they're there, and they're there to calm you down, and they talk to you, and to go through things, and it's really helpful.
I felt a bit scared because I was on my own, but Noel was very helpful to me.
It's a real good relief off my shoulders to know that that's it over with, that's it finished, you know, and I don't have to go back to the courts again.
I've said all I could say, and what's done is done, and I just want to move on, you know what I mean?
It is good if you get a good response, but you feel bad. Like, I was thinking, if I don't get a good response and if bad comes out of all of this, then you'll be thinking, like, well, I've let myself down and I've let everybody else down, but I did get a good response, so you feel like you're on cloud nine, like you're floating on air. It's brilliant.
I just felt more relaxed and there was nothing to worry about anymore.
That's it, folks. Short and sweet. What we want to do now really is just to maybe get some feedback from yourselves, you know, maybe any questions you may have in relation to, you know, working with children and getting children through the whole court process.
One thing that, I'm Fiona Morrison. I have several hats in life. I was a defence solicitor. I was a criminal defence solicitor, so I've cross-examined on behalf of defendants. I'm now, actually, my day job is a prosecutor in Cheshire CPS, and I'm currently working with the CPS Inspectorate. And I was one of the inspectors on the victim and witness joint thematic criminal justice inspection. And we're about to do the follow-up inspection. And we're also looking at possibly doing a bespoke piece of work in relation to young witnesses. So that's sort of where I'm coming from. I have experience of in courts doing it from both perspectives as well. And here, one thing that crossed my mind is that one of the children, the younger one, referred to Noel, and the other one, the older girl, was referring to the NSPCC. And one thing we found is that they really don't know who or what organisation people are from. There's an awful lot of confusion at court with witnesses, in particular with young witnesses, as to where their support is coming from. And one thing that suggested to us is that there's an awful lot of fingers in the pie, and that the witness service, the young witnesses, NSPCC tend to do the young witnesses, I appreciate that, at most of the courts. But one of the girls was talking about Noelle, so she didn't have that appreciation. And I was just wondering whether you feel that, although the NSPCC support young witnesses in the main, whether there should be some consolidation of it, or whether you think they are really to be kept separate from the adult witnesses completely, or whether with the days of financial constraints we may have to look at running some resources together for witness care at court.
Can I start with that one? Firstly, the NSPCC don't, sadly, support most young witnesses in the main. We have 5 services across the United Kingdom currently: Northern Ireland, Devon and Cornwall, Essex, Surrey and Cheshire. In other parts of the country there are some bespoke services, Hull LSCB for instance. I know there's a colleague here today from Brighton where I think the local authority, the council, runs a service. The witness service do have a couple of bespoke young witness services, but for the most part across the country, the service a young witness will receive is variable. I mean, witness service will always be there to do good pre-trial court visits and support on the day, but I think that's probably more where children are going to become confused. I think if there is a specialist service, then the child will have a better understanding, because in theory they shouldn't be seeing lots of different people. And that's dependent on the relationships you've got with other agencies in your area. For example, in Devon and Cornwall, whilst the witness care officers would remain sort of involved in terms of overseeing things, the direct one-to-one communication with the child and the family is going to be from the Young Witness Service, the NSPCC, and that's where the family would know to go for their information. witness service wouldn't get involved at all, and that's by agreement. We'll do the look after the children, they'll look after the adults. Unless, of course, a child says, I don't want the NSPCC, thank you, I'm 16, go away, in which case we'd go away. So I think it is very much dependent on what arrangements have been set up locally as to what people are receiving. And I think the greater confusion is where there isn't a bespoke service and you've perhaps got lots of different people coming in. And I think you're right, we are beginning to see now with ISVAs and IDVAs and SARCs the boundaries about who does what for the 15, 16, 17 age group, I think is becoming very confusing, and confusing for the children in particular. Did you want to pick up on the Noel?
Well, Noelle obviously is one of the child was representing. She was just six, so obviously she would be referring to the supporter just on that name because she was so young. But we are quite clear on the children we work with because there are only two charities supplying direct services to criminal trials, and that is witness service for the adults and NSPCC young witness service for the children. I think the people who actually get confused tend to be the judiciary. Do you know, they don't seem to really make much of a difference. But the families are quite clear, and that's really only who support the families through that. And that would include, you know, maybe some more cases that might be bordering on civil cases, thinking of domestic abuse. If they're coming to the criminal trial, we will pick up there, whereas there may have been Women's Aid and other supporters in there, we would move into that one. So it's only a specific piece of work that we do, and they're aware of that, and then we move out.
Sheila Mayo, who run the Child Witness Support Scheme in Brighton and Hove. It's about, just wanted to ask you about consent at the beginning of the process, because what my child witness support workers very often come across, and we'll do 4 or 5, 6 visits before the trial, but we don't get involved until we know there's going to be a trial, is at a much more basic level, families are very confused about, did I consent to this? At the beginning, when I said my child could have an ABE interview, I thought their video was going to be shown. I didn't know they were going to have to go. That there's a gap. There's this big gap during the process between the initial investigation, which tends to be kind of you dash in and you do it because it's dramatic and things, and that maybe not enough time is taken. Now, maybe if you told kids what they'd have to do, no one in their right mind would ever let a child start. And I was pleased to hear Louise talking about we need a different system for children. But is that an issue for you, or where do you get involved?
Certainly our involvement is for the most part similar to yourselves, in that we don't start doing preparation work with children and young people until we know there's going to be a trial. That said, we do have situations where the police will interview a child on a Monday, think, oh my word, this child, this family needs a huge amount of help just at this point, and they will refer to us the next day and say, can you go along, can you reassure, can you explain the processes, please, which I think is the point you're making, which is really important. And I think there's two things. I mean, we've heard earlier today about perhaps, you know, the police saying, you know, just sign this statement or make this ABE and that's it, that's all over. And I gather that, you know, there are occasions when that does happen. My own experience would be that's few and far between. I think it's very much more about a child has come along, and for the most part, children who are coming along to make ABE statements, it's because they have been harmed in some way. So they're scared, they're possibly traumatised, and they're going to tell you what they have to tell you and get out as soon as possible. So they're not going to listen to whatever might be told of them. We very regularly get children coming along to us and saying exactly as you said there, we thought that doing the ABE interview was it. We didn't think we'd have to go to court. We didn't think we'd have to do any more. Because they just haven't heard what's been told to them at that point in time. And they do need some further ongoing support from a regular supporter, which I think is what, you know, good young witness services can do. I mean, what we would normally do, we do have an information leaflet that the police have that they can give out at time of interview saying, we're there, you know, we could give you help with this, this and this if you need it. So it does give them some hint of what's going to come next, I suppose. But I don't think it's good enough by any means. I think, you know, we're still not getting it right because we're still having people have a lot of misinformation.
One issue that we found was waiting times at court for witnesses is a big issue. Listing particularly at Crown Court, is a matter for the judiciary, and it's very difficult to try and... They have commitments to reduce it to less than 2 hours, etc., and there are schemes trying to do that. Do you find your remote scheme cuts down on waiting time, or are you still finding the hanging around waiting to give evidence, even when it's remotely, or can you somehow get them in nearer when they're due to give their evidence?
I think it's given us the capacity to have those conversations more. So we can ring up and say, do you really need all three children 10 o'clock on Monday? And then somebody who's got a sensible head on them will say, well, actually, no, we don't. We don't need any before 12. In fact, we've got one court where the senior resident judge has said, I don't want any child to be asked to come to my court before 2 o'clock on day one. No, I think that's probably unusual, but it's great. I think because we are there and we are very involved and we have... over quite a long period of time, developed good relationships whereby people will listen to what we might be saying, we can ring up and say, look, this batting order doesn't seem reasonable. Can we have it looked at? Can we have it changed, please? The problem is it's always too late because batting orders are made by prosecuting counsel, usually on a Friday for the trial on the Monday. They should be making those far, far earlier. Waiting times, I think, still beggar belief on the day. I think it's a lot easier for a child if they have got a safe environment where they're away from other people. I don't think children should be waiting in the same area as adult witnesses, I think, because they are going to hear conversations they shouldn't be hearing. That's why I don't think they should be even at court. I mean, I don't know how many of you have spent time sitting in a witness waiting room at a court. The conversations are nearly always wholly inappropriate for any child. And people don't think, because everybody's quite stressed, they don't think, oh, there's a child in the corner, I shouldn't be talking about this. So if a child is, for instance, at the NSPCC, you know, we have PlayStations, we have Nintendos, we have taught all our workers to play these games, so that, you know, you can't be a volunteer with the NSPCC unless you can do texting and, you know, things like that, that kids, you know, it keeps them relaxed. You know, we don't want them getting hyped up, but we want them feeling comfortable. We don't want them thinking, well, you know, how long is it now? Looking at their watches every 5 minutes, because virtually any child who is kept waiting longer and longer and longer is going to be less and less of a competent witness. So I think it's an area that still needs tackled by judges who should be saying what's going on, it must stop, and listings need training. They need something about, oh, we've got children here, we don't need them all at one time, we can space them out appropriately. I mean, I can think of an example recently where the week before a trial involving 9 children, as it happens, were listed to take place in the first 3 days of the trial. Which the trial was listed for 2 or 3 weeks. Well, we knew first off that there was going to be legal arguments for at least the first half of day one. We knew that there would, because there always are, other legal arguments and cases that have to be put before a judge on a morning before a case even starts. We knew that at least 4 of the children had tapes that lasted over 3 hours each. Now, you add those sums up and you already know that these children are going to take a week and a half. But they didn't work that out themselves until day one of the trial. And so they then changed it. And we then went back and said, no, you've still got it wrong. You're going to take another week. You need a day and a half per child. And that went to the judge. He looked and said, yeah, we need a day and a half per child. So we were then able to put it all back and stop it. But there's a complete lack of reality about things like how long it's going to take a child to... listen and sit through their video. They're going to need breaks, they're going to need to go to the loo, they're going to get tired and bored. And it's really something that needs to be addressed with the courts.
Again, just slightly different in Northern Ireland, because we work as well as in the Crown Courts, in the Magistrates and Youth, and our previous Lord Chief Justice, he made a ruling that no children should be coming in before 12 o'clock. Now, unfortunately for us, although that was a very good ruling, the Public Prosecution Service then said, well, OK, no contests and anything, I'm going to go ahead before 12, but they're asking that the children do come in early so they can meet with them. And the difficulty is trying to marry those two, you know, sort of that practice up with their need. And again, we have a very good public prosecution service, but they are obviously overworked, overstretched, and their view of being able to try and see a child, you know, for 5 minutes before they go into court, means that they have to ask them to come in then sort of 9:30 in the morning.
I'd throw a question back, actually, that has come to us since we've had the remote video links, because the children no longer have the judge come in and meet them on the morning or the prosecution barristers. And whilst I think I would have sat here 7 or 8 years ago and said, it's so important the child meets the judge, it's so important the child meets the prosecutor, I sit here now thinking, actually, whose needs does that meeting serve? It lasts a few minutes. And for a lot of children, if you ask them who they've seen and what they do, they won't remember. I think for some children it's really important, and I think children should have choice. And if the child wants to meet the prosecutor, why couldn't it be arranged so it could perhaps happen the day before, so it doesn't sort of mess up the trial? Could not people within the criminal justice system just make a little bit more time for the child, rather than the child having to make time for the prosecutor?
Just an anecdote, really. A child who met prosecutor, defence barrister and the judge, the most charming one was the defence barrister. She thought that was the prosecutor and was totally appalled when this person then slammed into her when she saw them on the screen and thought, oh, that's that nice person that came and talked to me. So... Mm. Yeah, I'm with you. You need to be very clear, and it's not always the most constructive thing to do unless the child really wants to do it, and then it's extremely clear who is who, because when confronted by three, this girl was completely confused and charmed and then terribly upset. Mm. So
pass the parcel, isn't it?
Yeah. Can I just say on that point that... the prosecutor pledge says that the prosecutors have to go and introduce themselves, so that's what we do. We go in and say, hi, hello, and we sort of explain the process to them. Now, is there now a duplication in services? If you're explaining the process and sort of going through the, not the evidence, because that's not what I mean, but you're explaining what will happen, who will go in which order, the mechanics of the proceedings. And if the prosecutor is going in to sort of introduce themselves and sort of talk about all of that as well, do you think there is a lot of duplication of effort going in there? And that for some children, all they really need to do is sort of, like you say, on the video link, if that's how it's going to be on the remote link, is just the face on the other side of the link before the actual hearing to say, this will be the barrister that will be, or prosecuting solicitor who will be representing almost your interests.
I mean, to an extent, I think you're quite right. I think there is some duplication, which isn't always helpful. I mean, we have sometimes experiences where we've, you know, explained to children what's going to happen, and then we go and do the pre-trial court visit, and you know, everybody from the court is available that day. So the court manager takes part, witness service takes part, a court usher takes part, and everyone says something slightly different, and we all end up very confused. I mean, I think the... In terms of what you're saying, the prosecutor going in and explaining to the child on the day what's going to happen, it's too late. They need to have had that explained to them beforehand. I think, however, what is important is the prosecutor explaining to the child on the day what's happening now. I think it would be really good if prosecutors could come in and say to the child, I'm sorry we've been delayed, it's because of this. And you can do that over the remote video link, if that's where you are, or it can be done in the court where the child is waiting. I think it's really important they know the person who's presenting the case about them is keeping them in touch with what's happening. So I think, you know, yes and no is the answer.
Can I just say, my experience, I work at Essex Young Witness, and when we've done pre-trial visits... you sometimes get the prosecution barrister come down and meet the child. However, when we're at court, slightly different to Northern Ireland and Surrey, we don't have a remote link. So we're actually going into the three Crown Courts in Essex. You don't always see prosecution there. We would always think it's good practice that the judge and the barristers come down, but in my experience, that doesn't always happen.
Yeah. One of the things we've also found is that in the magistrates and youth courts, I mean, they are completely chaotic, and we have managed to get a separate room for the children, for magistrates and youth, but it's very difficult for the prosecutor. And one of the difficulties for the prosecutor at the moment is actually the judiciary. Now, there has been a local agreement signed up that they, you know, the children are not quite on, are not on site. They're in another part of the court. And the judiciary have signed up to the prosecutor, you know, the children being there and the prosecutor being able to go across. It'll take another 5-10 minutes to talk to the child, to consult with them. We're finding more and more that the judiciary, the magistrates are just going, no, there's not enough time. And so therefore they're actually not giving the chance to follow the prosecutor's code, I think it was what you were saying, or what they've signed up to. And so they've been actually disabled by the judiciary. And it's quite difficult then to bring this to, because although you know, the higher judges have signed up to it, the actual working practice is just not happening. And that's what one of the bigger issues we have to try and tackle.
And I think that's really what's interesting about today, in a way, that we are hearing constantly, and we have done over recent years, that the services that are provided to children who are victims are a complete postcode lottery. It doesn't happen the same anywhere in the country at all. Why that is, I don't know why. I mean, it was really good to hear Louise Casey saying earlier that, you know, from the new year, she's going to be focusing on children, because obviously, being slightly biased, we would argue that children are the most vulnerable of individuals going into the criminal justice system. They have the smallest voice, and they need people like ourselves to help them make their voice a lot louder, so that all young people are getting, you know, appropriate and full services across the United Kingdom. And I would really hope that people who are in a position to take that forward, that are here today from the Ministry of Justice, etc., can be looking at what services there are for children and making sure they are provided further across the country. It's interesting that last year, I think it was the beginning of last year, the Home Office produced a national toolkit for developing young witness services, bespoke, specific young witness services across the United Kingdom. Obviously, didn't have any money attached. It's not going to have any money attached this week, next week, or the week after. But as far as I'm aware, that toolkit has not had any real impact on developing new services in the country, and that is really, really unfortunate. So, thank you all for staying and listening. A few people who are really interested in the needs of children and young people. If you've got any sort of specific questions afterwards or in the future, then please feel free to contact us at either of our services.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stay home.